From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. The majority of Americans have tried pot at some point.
Hey, man. You got a joint?
No, not on me, man.
It'd be a lot cooler if you did.
So now you can smoke pot in Atlanta and pay a minimal fine if you're caught. We're going to talk about that in a couple minutes. Then we'll go to the break room to talk about Super Nintendo and a city in Georgia named Amazon. But first, we talked yesterday about writing music for movies with the guys from Atlanta band Manchester Orchestra.
It was nice creating something that isn't the main art piece. You're adding to someone else's vision.
We asked for your favorite movie soundtracks. So here's one from Hober Mallow in Atlanta.
Mine has to be from the 1951 movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still. The soundtrack to that movie really set the tone for sci-fi movies to come.
Lady Macbeth tweets, favorite score is Field of Dreams. Movie means a lot to me. It was playing on the PA at Epcot once and I burst into tears. Poor worker came over very concerned, explained it was the music. Felt silly. Josh McGill says, love James Horner's Braveheart score, outlawed tunes on outlawed pipes, so evocative. And Min Pothoff casts a vote for Morricone's Once Upon a Time in the West. We love to get your music recommendations. Call and tell us what they are at 404-500-9457 or find us on social media and we might feature your comments on the show. Earlier this week, the Atlanta City Council unanimously approved a measure to basically decriminalize marijuana in the city. Now, someone caught with an ounce or less of weed will pay a $75 fine but not face arrest. With me to talk about this is Andrea Young, Executive Director for the American Civil Liberties Union of Georgia. Hello.
Hi, how are you? Great to be here.
It's good to have you. I have to imagine that oftentimes these laws about marijuana confuse people because there's city law, there's state law, and then there's federal law, right? Yeah. How does that play out here in the city?
Yes, this is very much a city, a change to the city practices. And we have to remember that City of Atlanta does not mean Metro Atlanta. It means literally
the
city limits of Atlanta. And it's an important step, towards a more rational approach to marijuana use. I think the concern in the community is, and across the country, is that these laws disproportionately affect African Americans. And this, in the home birthplace of Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement, this is just not acceptable.
Let's hear this comment from Kwanzaa Hall, the Atlanta City Councilman who helped lead the effort to decriminalize pot. Here he is speaking Monday.
We are seeing families torn apart. We're seeing young people lose their scholarships. We're seeing people become unemployable, all because of possession of less than an ounce. And primarily the neighborhoods, the zip codes, the people are people of color living in parts of our city that have been left behind, that have been neglected.
Now, I have read arguments from people saying, look, it doesn't matter. I don't know how we say this is targeting people of color when if you're smoking pot and it's doing something illegal, that's your fault, right?
Then how is it that, 90% of those arrested in the city of Atlanta are African-American? African-Americans and whites use pot at the same rate. And yet all across the country, there are these tremendous disparities in the punishment for using marijuana.
Technically speaking, though, a federal officer could still arrest you in...
A federal officer, a state officer.
Yeah.
Yes, this is not like Washington, D.C. or California or Denver. I just returned from Denver where it's really free use. What we've tried to do is reduce the damage that's being done in our communities by these laws. And this is a step in that direction. But I certainly would not encourage anyone to feel like there's no penalty for using marijuana in the city of Atlanta.
We asked some Atlantans what they thought about the city's decision to decriminalize weed, and here are some of those answers.
My name is Ella. I think that that's a good step forward. Personally, I'm in favor of legalizing marijuana because then it would be easier to regulate, and also it has less health repercussions than nicotine. So I don't see why we haven't done that yet.
My name is Sanan Sinharoy. I think it's a great idea. I think it will lead to fewer arrests of minorities throughout the city.
My name is Sydney Partain. I don't know, I'm an education advocate, and so I like that people can be clear-headed to go do schoolwork. So I'm concerned, but I'm not like going to go riot or anything. I think it's going to be okay.
There are concerns because marijuana has long been labeled as a gateway drug to other things, that basically we are, on whatever scale, legalizing something that could make the drug problem in Atlanta worse. What's your response to that?
Well, the real problem is that marijuana has been a gateway to incarceration. And once one has a drug arrest on their record, there's a whole cascade of consequences. You heard Kwanzaa Hall talking about losing scholarships. People have difficulty getting a job. They have difficulty getting an apartment. A jail sentence for marijuana is a devastating consequence. And that is really what makes it a gateway more to incarceration than other drug use. The use of marijuana has been stable. So it's not a deterrent. These laws have not been a deterrent to using marijuana. Even in the state of Georgia, we've recognized there are medicinal uses for marijuana. You know, across the country, there are movements. There are many conditions for which marijuana is beneficial and less problematic than, say, opioids. So we just have to be smart and be reasonable about these laws and about these practices.
If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with the Georgia ACLU Executive Director Andrea Young, and we're talking about the decriminalization of pot in Atlanta. And I want to always be very careful that I'm explaining that there are limits. This is only within the city limits of Atlanta. It only refers to Atlanta City cops, and you would pay a $75 fine instead of being charged with a crime, being arrested, and being put in jail. Why is this a civil liberties issue?
Right. Well, there's no greater civil liberty than the freedom of being free from government control. And so the ACLU has had a position for a number of years that marijuana should not, the use and possession of marijuana should not be legal. There's not enough of a government interest in controlling people's use of marijuana for the reasons
that you
heard.
As opposed to, say, opioids, the ACLU thinks there is a government interest in controlling
it. Yeah, things that actually are doing, do a damage to the person or community. But the greater damage from marijuana has been the laws themselves. The racially disproportionate impact with which they're applied, and the lifelong consequences. So we have young people who are generally law-abiding, and their lives are ruined because of these laws.
And yet, when you look at across the board, drug use is higher per capita among whites than it is among minorities. And yet, as you've mentioned, minorities are more likely to be charged, they're more likely to be arrested, they're more likely to put in prison for them. And so therefore, for the ACLU, what is the next step? If let's say, for example, I assume the ACLU thinks there's a government interest in controlling cocaine.
Yeah, and we're not interested in our primary interest right now, especially in Georgia, is reducing mass incarceration. Georgia has and this is something that's a bipartisan concern, that we're spending way too much money on our criminal justice system and not in the smart ways. And this is an easy example of, nationally, we spend $3 billion on law enforcement relating to marijuana possession. That's $3 billion that could be spent on drug treatment programs. It could be spent on community rehabilitation. There are so many more constructive ways to spend that kind of money and spend it focusing on efforts to actually keep communities safer.
Is it fair to say that this change in Atlanta could mean no jail time and no criminal record for thousands.
Absolutely. I think that's absolutely true. And we also hope that it will, you know, set a leadership role for the state. The state will also be looking at moving from making marijuana possession from a felony to a misdemeanor in the state of Georgia. That will be considered in the upcoming legislative session. So Georgia is getting smarter on criminal justice, and we're working with communities. This is really also about citizen action. The people were heard in this vote in the city council. You know, people mobilized around this. Important organizations, civic organizations, got behind this measure. And so I think it's also elected officials listening to the people that they serve.
I know that criminal justice reform has been a major effort on our governor's part throughout his terms in office. But I wonder, what do you think made the difference? Because people have been trying to get Atlanta City Council to make this move, actually many entities in Georgia, to take this step for years. What do you think made the difference this time?
Well, I think there's been a number of things changing nationally. Even Canada now is looking at decriminalization of marijuana. But frankly, elections matter. And there's an election coming up, you know, in next month. In fact, early voting starts October 16th, so get out there and vote. And I think it does make elected officials a little more responsive. A number of candidates, a number of people on the city council are trying to move up, you know, move into the mayor's space, move into chair of the city council, president of the city council. So I think it does make people more responsive. And I think they were hearing this as they went around Atlanta, going to community forums. Admirably, there's a community forum. If you haven't been to a mayor's forum, there's one happening almost daily. And take advantage of the accessibility to your elected officials. But elections matter, and voters can be heard. And I think this is a time when the voters were heard.
We have about a minute and a half left, and I wonder if you would explain what are some of the other efforts? Because really, what the ACLU wants is to have justice be dealt fairly to everyone, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want anyone arrested in larger numbers because of their skin color. Right. How else do you go about achieving that?
Right. Well, we're looking at a number of things. We're involved in efforts to look at reevaluate misdemeanor bail reform. 64% of the people in our county and city jails are there pre-trial simply because they can't make bail. Again, that has to do with people who have less money, who are often, younger, people of color, Black and Hispanic. So that's one that will be one of our priorities going forward. And again, we've had very good interest, and there's a lot of discussion going on in the legal community on all sides of the aisle about correcting these practices. So that's one of the important things we're looking at. And we also want people, as the governor's race heats up, to understand that what happened in Atlanta can happen across the state. If people go up and talk about the things that have happened to them, the voices of the incarcerated, those impacted by the system, we need to hear from them.
Andrea Young is executive director for the ACLU of Georgia. Thank you so much.
Great, thank you.
Just ahead, the break room ready to play some old school Nintendo. First, though, we'll add a little music to your morning. This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. This is On Second Thought. So let's add two more songs to our Essential Georgia playlist. We asked a member of the Athens group, Cicada Rhythm, to nominate songs that best represent the Peach State. The rules are really simple. Songs have to be written or performed by a Georgian, and musicians cannot choose their own tunes.
My name is Dave Kersless. I play in Cicada Rhythm. I play guitar and sing.
I'm a bad person, I'm a bad person.
The first song I want to choose is I'm a Bad Person by Nathan Nelson. Nathan Nelson is kind of an Atlanta treasure that's pretty still under the radar.
Cause there ain't no good in me. If you took all my lies and laid them out in the
be stretching the truth from Saigon to Saigon.
I'm a bad person. I'm a bad person. I sure ain't the first one, but I might be the worst one. He seems to be still doing kind of that outlaw country music, and he's just brutally honest with his lyrics.
I suck on the barrel of my Smith & Wesson, 'cause there ain't no good in me. Satan, he sold me his soul in a sack. Now he's pitching a fork, 'cause I won't give it back.
A lot of artists are trying to be politically correct in every statement, and which sometimes is a good thing, but with Nathan, he doesn't really beat around the bush, and it's kind of rare to hear someone sing like that. When I first met him, I was just kind of taken back by, how, craftful his songwriting was, but at the same time, how much he didn't really seem to care about the audience. He was just kind of doing it for himself. It seemed kind of like what he was born to do.
It's hard to explain things I've done in the past. If I wasn't me, I would kick my own ass. 'Cause I'm a bad person.
What it resonates to me is just a form of songwriting that you don't hear as much anymore. He sounds like an old soul, and it's just refreshing to hear that type of music again.
There ain't no God in me.
The next song I want to talk about is Everything Must Goes by Slow Parade. Slow Parade is based in Atlanta, Georgia, and is led by, it's kind of the brainchild of Matt Pendrick, who's a singer and songwriter there.
I woke up late this morning, a little cold and still hungry. Tried to shake that feeling of a fear I couldn't see.
Matt and I have like a long history. We were basically, raised in diapers together. And honestly, we were talking about it the other day. I don't think either of us would be playing music still right now if it wasn't for each other. We both kind of became infatuated with guitar and just songwriting and music at the same time.
I can't find a single thing to say. Something has got.
I think it's really cool. Matt has somewhat of a rootsy feel when you go and see him live, and you'll see and understand that. But he also brings a very modern touch to it and sound. People sometimes describe their music as psychedelic. He's just a great songwriter and someone, that's influenced me a lot.
And now the clouds have parted, but the light, it never lasts. My house of cards is standing, but the sun is sinking fast. And all the good I've ever done, it's suddenly so clear. Everybody's going somewhere. I guess I'll stay right.
That song, a lot of people around him, a lot of musicians too, were leaving Atlanta and going other places, but he's staying there and definitely still writing great songs and creating a name for himself.
I can't see, staring at the ground, but I hear a joyful sound.
I think Georgia has one of the most diverse sounds out there, I mean, if you just look at the music history, it's so thick between, like, Little Richard and Otis Redding, Blind Willie McTell. There's just so many Georgia artists that kind of got the ball rolling and then, turned to the Allman Brothers And then all the music that's going on there right now with the hip-hop scene, and it's just so diverse.
That was Dave Kerslis of the Athens-based group Cicada Rhythm. He shared his picks for our Essential Georgia playlist. Cicada Rhythm is playing at the Georgia Theater in Athens Monday, October 16th. Doors open at 8 p.m. If you have a song or artist that you want to nominate for the playlist, you can call us. It's 404-500-9457. And to listen to all the Georgia playlists, visit gpbnews.org and click on the GPB Music tab. It's been a long week. We have talked about what makes people heroic in tragic circumstances and what's inside a chicken nugget. So as we do every Friday, we've gathered a group of smart people to help us kick back, unwind a little, laugh, maybe relax, think about what the heck happened this week. It's time for the Break Room. Yeah. Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis.
When I was dead broke, man, I couldn't picture this. Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Did you just see what happened?
What?
Did you see the way she pointed at the check? She gave me the finger.
Joining us in the Break Room this week, Kathy Lohr, former NPR correspondent, also Christian Zilovitz, director of community outreach for the Pride School Atlanta, Greg Williams, mortgage banker, host of the conservative radio show Greg's List, and Hector Fernandez is a professor in the Department of World Languages and Cultures at Georgia State. Welcome, everybody.
Good morning.
We made it to Friday. Now, listen, let's start with AI, right? Artificial intelligence, because there's a certain amount of paranoia when it comes to robots.
Hello, operator. Get me the Navy.
Hello. You've reached the Navy's automated phone service.
Squidward, the robots are running the Navy.
Attention, everyone. Run for your lives. Robots have taken over the world.
Okay, they may not have taken over the world yet, but there is a new burger-flipping robot named Flippy that has replaced some grill cooks in fast food restaurants all across America. And which leads me to think, look, if they can replace a grill cook, could robots do your job? Kathy?
No.
No.
First, I don't think that robots will replace all jobs. I mean, flipping a burger is different than creating sort of a masterpiece, being a chef, getting the right ingredients, right presentation. You know, so
that doesn't happen in a lot of fast food restaurants.
Right. Right.
No, but they can't. I was going to say they can't think they're not hell
yet.
Right.
Yet.
Well, robots in fast food and other customer service, the customer service arena, that's always been kind of the free market argument towards arbitrarily raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. So they've always said, well, if you do raise it to $15 an hour, then we're just going to put robots and kiosks in. And it looks like it's already happening. Could a robot do my job? No. I'm a mortgage guy. We deal with a lot of technology as part of our process, but you still need to be able to kind of walk people through the process and give them the old human touch that is still required in my arena.
Hector?
Hey, I try not to be...
Could a robot teach Spanish?
See.
Well, Pixel, and you know, Google just came out with Pixel Buds, which are earphones that translate instantaneously. Happily for me, I teach culture rather than language. So my scholarship is based on something that happens to be a bit more related with critical thought. So I think I'm safe, at least for a while.
Christian?
Well, one of the things that's changed a lot in education, actually, is not necessarily robots, but having remotely filmed, you know, videos and online education is huge these days. And where lots of people opt out of regular school, they are now finding their way to the online schools, which is quite a racket all around the nation. And there are a lot of companies in it that claim to be able to serve your needs, but actually they can't. And so that's one of the places where people actually need to be really careful and accessing that remote education. So it's not quite robot, but I don't know if I'd want a robot running a kindergarten classroom.
That could be bad. If you've seen the new Kingsman movie, you know why. Let's move on and talk about other technology. The Super Nintendo. It was a big, huge deal back in 1991.
So that's the new Super Nintendo Entertainment System.
What about it?
They say it has 16-bit technology, whatever that means.
Oh, I see. What else would you say?
That it has 3D graphics and digital stereo sound, and that Super Mario World is included.
And it still is.
Yes.
Nintendo has resurrected the 27-year-old Super Nintendo Classic, and it sold out immediately.
Right.
Look, the graphics are still really cheesy. The music is still tinny. So what draws people to these nostalgic...
I think it's the fact that the games are simple. If you've ever tried to, I think the last video game machine I played was the old school, the NES, the Nintendo. I cut grass all summer long to be able to buy that because my neighbors had it, and I was like, I want to play Super Mario Brothers, not three or whatever, but I wanted to play the classic, and I finally did it. And by that time, they'd moved on to other games like Legend of Zelda, so I was always a little bit late to the party on that. But we went to an Airbnb in Augusta about 6 months ago, and they had a Nintendo hooked up. So my wife and everybody's playing, you know, Super Mario World or whatever, and because they're able to, you know, pick up the game very easily. The games now are just way too complicated. The controllers have like 37 buttons. You have entire manuals, you know, to even learn how to play Call of Duty or whatever.
Yeah, my son would say that's why. Is anybody else attracted to the classic Nintendo?
Well, it's regression. It's nostalgia. And people want to be kids all over again. And people prefer something that's less polished because they sort of romanticize it and they equate it with a simpler way of life.
The classics.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a longing for the past, I think. And maybe when people thought their lives were simpler, even if they weren't simpler, it's like in your head you think it is.
Going back to high school sounds like a nightmare, though. Anyhow. Let's move on and talk about something that is from a simpler time of most of our lives. Dr. Seuss, of course, a childhood staple.
That Sam I am, that Sam I am. I do not like that Sam I am. Do you like green eggs and ham? I do not like them, Sam I am. I do not like green eggs and ham.
Yeah, well, neither does a Boston librarian. She returned the Dr. Seuss books that the White House shipped to her library. She says her library already has plenty of copies of those books. And Donald Trump should, quote, gift books to underfunded and underprivileged communities that continue to be marginalized and maligned. Is this a librarian getting too political?
I would say no. And librarians are very political. And they are probably the most quiet politicians and, you know, lobbyists all around the country. And there are hundreds and thousands of them. And my librarian friends would tell you very clearly that they are by far the quietest activists out there. And they do a lot more than we realize. We are in the library.
Kathy, what do you think? Too political?
I think she's free to express her opinion. And yes,
it's a public library.
It is political. Well, it's not. It's a school library.
Oh, that's
true.
Yeah.
But I just want to, you know, of course, the Cambridge public, the schools came out with their own, you know, statement saying the librarian's opinion does not represent a formal rejection of the gift. So they and that she should not be using her opinion for political purposes. But I think it's her right to say that. And she also introduced a list of like 10 books that would have been better books than what she felt.
Well, she was being a librarian. I mean,
she was.
I mean, that's what they're trained for. They give advice. It's automatic. It's built in them. You know, I don't think she thought about it as political. I mean, it can be construed as political, but she was basically doing what a good librarian is supposed to be doing.
She also said the books were racist, and the irony was she would actually been pictured wearing the Cat in the Hat outfit like 2 years before, and Michelle Obama previously had read Dr. Seuss books at her library. So I think that this was an overt political attempt. And sometimes if you get a gift, just take it. And if she wants to donate it to underprivileged kids in Boston, that could have been under her purview. This was just completely out of line.
Come on, Greg. It's Dr. Seuss.
Yeah. That's why it shouldn't have been a big deal.
She said they had so many copies.
She said they had
Let me put this out to the listeners because I know they're going to have opinions. The number is 404-500-9457. You can find us on Twitter. It's at OST Talk. I should mention that our discussion, all four of you said you couldn't be replaced by a robot. And Word Player says, I hear a lot of hubris being expressed. I wouldn't be certain about those positions. So clearly listeners are not convinced that you guys could not be replaced.
We're all replaceable.
By a robot. You know how to reach us. Find us on social media and let us know your opinions. Well, we only have about a minute left, but I would say let's put this out here. If you were going to send a book to a library, I mean, she was basically saying we're inundated with Dr. Seuss, which doesn't surprise me. So let's go around really quickly. Kathy, what book would you send?
Harry Potter, probably.
The Fountainhead.
Come on.
The Outsiders.
That's a good one.
The Adventures of Nanny Piggins is what my 9-year-old would say.
Nice. Listeners, tell us what book you would send to a library that has too many Dr. Seuss books, and we're going to be coming back in a moment. It is Friday. We are hanging out in the break room. Just ahead, we'll talk about how President Trump has handled the crisis in Puerto Rico and how badly, one Georgia town wants to attract Amazon's new headquarters. This is On Second Thought. Headley, this is On Second Thought. We're having coffee and a little bit of chatting in the break room. My guests today are Christian Zilovitz, Director of Community Outreach for the Pride School Atlanta, Greg Williams, host of the conservative radio show Greg's List, Hector Fernandez of Georgia State University, and Kathy Lohr, former NPR correspondent. And before we went to a small break, I asked what book you would send. Joel Cook tweeted a title I cannot repeat on public airwaves. And Rabbit says, I'd send The Girl Who Circumnavigated Fairyland in a Ship of Her Own Making, which is a fantastic book. I absolutely endorse that choice. So let's talk about something that is also not suitable for public airwaves. Chances are you have probably done it, though, and there is probably a good reason for it.
Gestures help us communicate things words just can't.
This is me expressing myself, okay?
Anyone with a brain and a middle finger can see why it got so popular.
Georgia's Supreme Court has ruled it's okay to give people the middle finger. It says specifically, if you want to flip off a priest, go ahead. The court overturned the conviction of a man who gave the middle finger to his pastor during a service. The justices ruled that the middle finger is protected speech. Hector, you're already nodding your head. You're happy with this.
Absolutely.
You love giving people a finger.
How do you guess?
I know that because you're wearing a Yankees hat.
Absolutely. Go Yankees. Go
Judge. He's a giver and receiver of the finger.
That's right.
Regardless. Go Yankees. You guys are just envy the Yankees. Well, regardless. The point is, you do have the right, and absolutely, you should be able to do it. Now, if the religious leader happens to be a good religious leader, she or he should turn the other cheek, right?
That's what I don't know why the pastor just didn't ignore this, why they brought charges. I mean, the whole thing seems really crazy, a little bit crazy. But I say also, it may be constitutional, but it may not be advisable if you want to be around that congregation.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to get kicked out of small group for that. They're not going to let you come and study the good word with them. Is it protected speech? Of course. I mean, we have a lot of protections that, frankly, allow people to demonstrate how low of a person they are. So,
well, as a teacher,
you've had that happen a number of times.
I've had a student stand up and say it and flip it. You know, the worst you can do is get suspended for a few days from school, even if you do that in a high school setting. So the idea that you would be charged and convicted with anything.
With jail time.
I mean, I'm guessing perhaps they were upset with something that was said, and instead of just walking out, or perhaps if there are mental health issues and there are people who are, just because you're opposed to something that the pastor says, it doesn't mean you don't have a right to be there. If you can't behave in kind public, perhaps you should just gently be asked to leave and come back when you can behave better, like you would ask an 8-year-old to do.
Hey, okay. The fact that you flip somebody doesn't mean you have to be like amazingly rude. I mean, it can be done.
It could be like a quiet one.
Amazingly rude. Just rude. Regular rude.
You can have your hand in your pocket and be doing it.
Let's move on to our next topic. Puerto Rico, obviously, that's a developing tragedy there, still ongoing. Here's something President Trump said during his visit to Puerto Rico.
If you look at a real catastrophe like Katrina, and you look at the tremendous hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that died. Now, what is your death count as of this moment? 17?
16 certified.
16 people certified. 16 people versus
in the thousands.
All right. He also created considerable backlash when he tossed paper towels to people like footballs. So why is he having trouble with this? Why can't the president get it right on Puerto Rico?
Well, nothing he would do would be considered right by the media. The throwing the bounty at the crowd was interesting, though. I think next time he should bring a T-shirt cannon and shoot MAGA shirts
out.
Come
on, you're making light of a serious situation.
Yeah, no.
I'm not making light of it. What I'm doing is a little hyperbole because everything he would do is wrong. The problem with Trump is sometimes he doesn't finish his sentence or his thoughts very well. He was trying to compliment Puerto Rico, but it's difficult to compare tragedies and try to say, "Well, you guys are better off than Katrina."
He's not refined, Greg.
He was telling them
15 dead people is okay. It's not as bad. I mean, 15 dead people
what
are.
What he was,
wait,
later,
we're not going to argue about it. We're going to stay civil.
All right.
So, Hector, do you want to get your thoughts?
Yes. Basically, I get this feeling Mr. Trump doesn't like certain parts of the population. And in the case of Puerto Rico, he came across pretty poorly. You know, the paper towels, letting the Puerto Ricans know, according to him, that they had messed up his budget. You know, telling them that they wanted everybody else to do things for them. The 15 count of bodies, which according to him wasn't that bad. I mean, how many times can you offend a population? I mean, that's pretty bad. On top of it, I mean, it's general impression, Mr. Trump is not big on empathy, you know.
Well, he's not big on facts either. And
yeah,
so
that's a journalist's response.
I'm sorry. Well, but I mean, there were less than 2,000 people, or fewer than 2,000 people that died in Katrina. But there should never be a comparison of disasters.
Tragedies, yeah.
And I've been to so many. But the other thing is, it seems like Trump wants to be a rock star. He wants the spotlights. He wants the adoring crowds. He wants to walk on stage and do his thing. And when things don't go his way, then he pouts and he tweets and he criticizes people.
Christian?
My take on this is partially the fact that I wonder if he really does have the social skills embedded in him that make him capable of handling situations like this on the fly.
Because it's tough. This is a tough...
It's not easy. Obama would have, you know, anybody's going to have a hard time walking into this.
Right.
But I wonder, because he's shown his ability over and over again that walking into situations like this without being fully prepped with really good language is challenging for him. The other thing is, he's of the same generation as my dad. And I mean, I'm 47. My parents are in their early 70s. Puerto Ricans were viewed as others for my entire life growing up in the North. And so if you view, he's from the North too. Puerto Ricans are other. So how can I view them as American, you know, as American as possible and not as other, when he comes from generations of seeing Puerto Ricans, especially as other from my experience?
It could be that these kind of situations that are tough require careful language, and his use of not being careful in his language is part of the reason some people liked him and elected him. We're going to move on though, and talk about Amazon. In this case, not the jungle, but the company. Would you want to visit a town called Amazon, Georgia? The city council of Stonecrest set aside 345 acres, and they want the state legislators to name that new town Amazon. They hope to allure the retail giant's new headquarters. Smart move or silly?
I think it sounds a little crazy, but why not? I mean, there are all these cities that are vying for it. I mean, maybe they want to go to, you know, Amazon is going to be in Amazon. I mean, they can market that.
Yeah, that could be their address.
50,000 jobs.
I don't think it's bad. I just, when I looked at their RFP or request for proposal, they are asking for a lot of giveaways. And
Amazon is?
Oh my God, yeah. It's like a 20-page RFP. It's almost like it's hand or uniquely designed for Atlanta to come in, because what they were asking for was, you know, world-class airport centrally located to, you know, the majority of the country, an educated workforce, and we do in the city certainly have a very educated high-tech workforce here. So they also want a lot of free stuff, and we'll have to do the math on it to see if 20 years of tax breaks is actually going to, you know, be a boon for it. 50,000 high-paying jobs is obviously great, but if they're not paying anything towards the infrastructure, then it may not be as big of a win as we think. We need to be real careful with our subsidies on this.
I don't think it's practical. This is like a romantic relationship, you know, when you have a suitor and the suitor overwhelms.
You get your name tattooed on your skin.
Well, too much generosity. It tends not to be appreciated. So yeah. I think it's just not a practical move in terms of negotiating.
The other thing is, I don't think Stonecrest is that area is attractive to Amazon, because based on where they are in downtown Seattle, that's where I moved here from. They want their people to be
right
in
the
most excellent schools near the city.
Midtown. Just,
and, you know, not and even if it's not Midtown, I mean, they're parked right in the heart of the city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they want access to the best schools, and out on I-20 isn't necessarily where they're going to find them.
And there are other cities like Detroit, which has a good chance. They have an educated workforce. They have a lot of things they want, and they don't have as bad a traffic. If you're just joining us, we're hanging out in the break room with Greg Williams of the radio show Greg's List, Hector Fernandez of Georgia State, Christian Zilovitz of the Pride School Atlanta, and journalist Kathy Lohr. All right, let's talk about something more difficult. Obviously, there was another mass shooting this Sunday. It comes about a year and a half since the last largest mass shooting in modern American history. It is clear at this point that something needs to be done.
Congress can be heroes by doing literally anything. Universal background checks. Enforce Obama's executive order that denied mentally ill gun purchases. Reinstate the assault weapons ban. Or come up with a better answer. Anything but nothing. Doing nothing is cowardice.
Now, that is an opinion. That's the opinion of Late Show host Stephen Colbert. There is very strong bipartisan support among Americans for background checks. I think it's over 80%. There's also very strong support for not allowing mentally ill people to own guns. But the nation is more polarized on guns than they ever have been before. In fact, at this point, gun ownership is a more powerful predictor of your political party than almost any other factor. So do we really think gun laws will change?
No.
Nobody wanted to go first on that one, right? So you can go.
I think the debate goes on every time we have a shooting. I mean, obviously, this was a bigger shooting than what we've had in a while. But the laws never change. A GOP Congress is never going to pass. And now they're talking, NRA is talking about looking at.
No, they said they would think about considering.
Yes, the stocks.
The bump stocks.
So I had a guy from Georgia Carey, Jerry Henry, on my show on a Tuesday, so we could talk with a little bit more education about this. Now Google University has given everybody a degree in bump stocks. This is not some engineering masterpiece. Outlawing them or regulating them more, I think will probably happen, but it's not some sophisticated. It's an accessory, first of all. So
I don't want to get focused just on bump stocks. I really want to figure out if we think that
there will be some movement that regulating like a bump stock or an accessory. I think we'll see something come out of it. So yes, I do think they can change the gun laws a little bit.
I think they better change, because I'll tell you one thing. I left Columbia because the state could not guarantee my safety. If this keeps on going in this direction, sooner or later, somebody's going to sue the government because they're not able to guarantee the well-being of the citizenry.
There's no way any government can ever guarantee the well-being
of a citizen. It's part of the agreement
We're going to remain civil. And the purpose of the break room is to show people we can be civil and talk about these things in a respectful way.
I'm smiling.
Way. So let's continue to prove
that. As long
that.
As he doesn't interrupt.
Gentlemen. Christian.
I'd just like to toss out there something that hit me, is that how do you decide who's mentally ill and what qualifies as mental illness? And I think that's something that we actually need to be really careful about, and who gets to determine when they're doing a background check or whatever, who has mental illness. And the fact that I think the majority of the guns that, you know, can be found on the street, and you don't need to go to a gun show or to a shop to find them. I mean, all the gun violence out there in gangland has nothing to do with people who are purchasing them, you know, on the up and up. And I think that's, you know, it's whether we change the laws or not, there's still way too much gun violence in this country compared to other countries around the world.
True.
Absolutely.
All right. We're going to have we'll have a full show dedicated to gun laws in Georgia and gun violence. And we would love to hear from you. Make your voice be heard. Let us know. What do you think can be done about the issue of gun violence? Do you think Congress could or should act? Do you own guns? And do you think regulation and ownership rights have to be in complete opposition to each other? We would love to hear where you stand. Call us at 404-500-9457. Since we're speaking about this difficult issue, some people feel that events like the Las Vegas murders should be labeled as domestic terrorism. But in fact, you may not realize there's no actual federal charge for that.
Under the law, we don't actually have a domestic terrorism law that you can use to charge people. The federal code provides a definition of it, but you can't actually charge people. So it's really up to Congress if they want to pass a law where people can be charged with domestic terrorism.
The Washington Post conducted a study on what violent acts are labeled terrorism and what aren't. It found mass shootings are much, much less likely to be considered acts of terror when you compare them to bombings. Do we think that should change? Should mass shootings be as likely to be labeled terrorism as a bomb?
Sure. I mean, it's an act of terrorism. I guess that the fact that there wasn't a political agenda, and in this case, in the Las Vegas shooter,
we don't
know it yet, which is why I'm surprised everybody's rushed to judgment already. But we don't know it. But he's also no longer alive to prosecute under any laws anyway. So I think that if it's a difficult subject, I have no problem calling the guy a terrorist. There's some people that say, well, it's not. We absolutely can't confuse and skew the lines. I have no problem calling him a terrorist. I just don't see, why it's such an urgent need to do so.
Why would you not call it a terrorism? I mean, Eric Rudolph was a terrorist. He obviously
the Olympics bomber.
But
that was a bombing.
That was a bomb.
He was several bombs.
Was a political agenda, though, right?
It was, but we don't know what this person's motives.
But we didn't name Dylann Roof, who committed the murders. We didn't call him a terrorist.
No, that was hatred. Basically. But no, regardless, I mean, it's really hard to generalize. I mean, in this particular case, you can have a shooting, and some shootings are exclusively to generate fear in the population. But then again, the modus operandi, to take it from there, this is something that almost begs to be considered on a case-to-case basis.
Well, and what's the definition of a terrorist as opposed to somebody's committing a hate crime? If your goal is to strike terror in the hearts of the people at the Jewish my friend, one of my friends survived the Jewish Federation shooting in Seattle, and another friend is visiting. She survived a shooting at a Planned Parenthood clinic. So when things like this happen, this terrorism, whatever it is, I mean, these mass shootings bring back that PTSD for everybody as well. So whatever you want to call it, there's still some kind of hate crime. But again, we don't have hate crimes in all of our states.
That's true. All right. We are out of time in the break room. I want to say thank you to all my guests. You just heard Christian Zilovich of Pride School Atlanta. We also spoke with journalist Kathy Lohr, Greg Williams of the radio show Greg's List, and Hector Fernandez teaches at Georgia State University. Thanks, guys.
Have a great weekend
to all of you. If you are pumped to play the old Super Nintendo, we actually used the wrong picture on our Twitter feed. Sorry about that, guys. Tell us about the nostalgia games that you love. Reach us at Facebook or on Twitter for today and the week. That's on Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headlee. Have a great weekend.